A brief foreword before I begin. This is a re-recording of the presentation I made at the OCA Diocese of New York and New Jersey College Ministry event. I have done my best to include as much information as possible from my original presentation, but there will be some minor changes. Also, I've tried to include some of the questions that were asked and their respective answers. I hope you find the information I present valuable. Hello, my name is Ed Ryan, and I am a biomedical engineering graduate student at the University of Connecticut, or UConn, and I'm currently the outreach coordinator for the UConn OCF chapter. I am also a recent convert, and I will explain more about this later. Now, I cannot offer any sort of deep theological concepts or messages, nor do I intend to try to do that. Instead, what I have to share is simply my story, how I came to know of Orthodox Christianity and how OCF impacted my life. I grew up knowing next to nothing about Orthodoxy. I was born into a Protestant family and was baptized in the Congregational Church of my hometown. There I had a pretty standard upbringing. I went to church each Sunday, and there was Sunday school during the service. We were divided up by age group, and would then learn about major biblical stories through various activities. This program was offered to children from kindergarten through sixth grade. For the 2 years after that, I was involved in the process of confirmation, which is probably the closest thing in the Congregational Church to the sacrament of chrismation. This program was designed to educate us enough so that the church felt we were ready to be in charge, to some degree, of our spiritual upbringing. During a baptism, the parents, child's parents and godparents are charged with raising the child in the Christian life, and by being confirmed, my peers and I were taking that responsibility upon ourselves. However, I, like the vast majority of my confirmation class, stopped regularly attending church after I was confirmed. My lack of participation was for two reasons. First is I simply lacked the desire to go. Congregational churches have a tendency to be very accommodating, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. However, this degree of accommodation often, in this case did, lead to an overall lack of identity. The second and much more serious reason was that I was developing a detachment with God. I did not think much of it at the time, but there was a hole developing, and at times I believed it would never be filled, that it was simply a part of me that I had lost. In an effort to address these issues, I began to look at other churches where I felt I might find a better fit. I had encountered other flavors of Christianity, though none of them really appealed to me. I found Episcopalians to be very much like Congregationalists, but with similar pros and cons for each. I was very much turned off by Roman Catholicism after attending a CCD class when I was in first grade. I was first surprised that I had to wait weeks for approval, which seemed pretty odd, especially to me as a 7-year-old. And when I finally was allowed to go, I was functionally treated as a leper, some sort of unclean child that should only be interacted with when absolutely necessary. This was very upsetting to me, and as such, I had no desire to do much else with the Roman Catholic Church after that. I also know this isn't a form of Christianity, but I did have some minor interactions with Judaism through two of my cousins. I thought it was nice, but just not what I was looking for. My first conscious interaction with Orthodoxy was when my uncle, who was my godfather from my baptism, married my aunt, who is now my new nan, my godmother. I like to joke that from the whole event resembled the movie My Big Fat Greek Wedding, but it is still the most accurate representation of it I can find. As to the service itself, I did not really think of anything of it at the time. It was just something different than what I was used to. In the fall of 2008, I started my first semester at UConn. My mother was very excited to see that right across from my dorm room was the local congregational church, but to be honest, I had no real intentions of going. I thought my Sundays would simply be another day to spend doing work, as I had already heard what the workload would be like for an engineering student. It was that first semester that I encountered OCF. It actually happened by accident, really. UConn has, at the beginning of each semester, an involvement fair. This is an event where students can meet members of the various campus organizations, which there are generally 300 or more represented. I was looking around and ran into one of my friends from high school. She was running the table for UConn OCF and told me that I should come to a meeting. I said okay, not thinking much of it. I thought, I might as well give it a shot. My first OCF meeting was at a Starbucks right off campus. In all honesty, I had no idea what to expect. But the meeting turned out to be quite straightforward. We started with a brief prayer, discussed chapter business, and then spent the rest of the meeting on a discussion topic brought by one of the officers. Overall, it was a fun time, though I initially viewed it as little more than hanging out with some of the college students. Church that Sunday, though, that was a whole different story. Now, it's really important to remember that I had been inside an Orthodox church a grand total of one time prior to that Sunday. It was a Greek Orthodox church for a wedding, so not your standard service. This time, I was going to Divine Liturgy at an OCA church, which at the time I'd been told is basically a Russian Orthodox church. To say the service was confusing would be an understatement. I had barely any idea what was going on. Yes, I recognized the epistle and the gospel readings, but that was about it. Fortunately, I was given very straightforward instructions. Just stand and follow along with what other people are doing. And don't go up for communion. Definitely don't do that. At the end of the service, I felt overwhelmed. It was way too much new stuff in way too short time. However, I couldn't help but notice something else. I felt good. Good in a way that I hadn't felt in quite some time. It was this feeling that made me want to keep coming back. And I did, as often as I could for the rest of the semester. The spring semester brought me one of the greatest challenges of my life. Now, as a person in reasonably good health, there are some basic things I expect to be able to do when I walk and go about my day, one of which is walking. Now, when I wake up one morning and I'm barely able to walk, there is something very wrong. I went to student health services where I was told I had a pilonidal cyst. A pilonidal cyst is a congenital defect where a group of skin cells form on a person's tailbone, and that really shouldn't be there. Now, the body recognizes this, and they start attacking them, thinking of it as a foreign body, and this causes the cyst to form. I was referred to a doctor in the area, and when I went to go see him, I was told that I needed to go to surgery the next day. My cyst was very infected, and it was only going to get worse if I didn't have it removed. To say the least, I was nervous. Despite going into a medical field, I'm terrified of going under the knife. I quickly arranged to move exams I had during the time I'd be at the hospital, and one of my friends from OCF, the same one who invited me initially, agreed to help me get the notes for one of the classes we had together. There was one thing I remember from that night that surprised me in a very good way. I received a phone call from a member of OCF, someone who I barely knew. He called me to offer to drive me to the hospital for my surgery, and he knew that I needed to be there at 5:30 in the morning, so this is a very, very early time for anyone to have to get up. I was really taken aback by this act of kindness. Here was someone who barely knew me, offering to go out of his way to get me somewhere. I did have to decline his offer, though, as my parents were driving up to take me to the hospital and make sure I was doing okay. The next morning, I went in for surgery where a 20 by 30 centimeter cyst was removed from my back. As a good size comparison, that's roughly the same size as a piece of letter printer paper. Due to the nature of the surgery, the site had to be left as an open wound, and painful dressing changes were required in order to allow for proper healing. I was given a pretty strict ultimatum here. If the wound got infected, I was going to die. And in truth, that's not what I wanted to hear, but that's what the situation was. When I returned to UConn from the hospital, I entered a new routine. Every morning of every day, I would walk to student health services, or I would get the dressing changed. This meant that I could basically never go anywhere. I could not go home, I could not visit friends or family, I could not go to church. One thing I could still do, however, was go to OCF. OCF became my lifeline. It was my reminder that every week, no matter how bad it went, no matter how much pain I was in, I knew that people still cared, that God still cared. And that made all the difference. I could not have been more grateful. The effect that OCF had on me really became apparent one day during a dressing change. The nurse, who usually did my dressing changes, asked how I was coping with all this. She was particularly concerned because I had issues with depression and anxiety during high school. I had to think about how to answer this. I knew I was doing okay, but I never really stopped to consider why. Then it dawned on me. OCF, with all its love, support, and guidance, helped me to get through this difficult time. To this day, I honestly do attribute OCF with having saved my life. I continued to remain active in OCF as best I could for the next 2.5 years. I had moved from being an essentially silent listener at the OCF meetings to being a leader in our chapter, taking on the role of outreach coordinator. I was responsible for trying to arrange service projects, other activities, and make sure people had rides to these events. I also decided that I had truly found my place spiritually. I wanted to convert to Orthodox Christianity. I talked to my priest and then began the arrangements to be chrismated. Now, in order to be chrismated, I needed an Orthodox Christian sponsor. My first thought was to look to my family. This made it a rather straightforward process because I have a grand total of one Orthodox family member. That would be my aunt, who I was talking about earlier. To be honest, my aunt was just a little bit skeptical when I first talked to her. She had never heard of OCF, and this was a rather sudden change that she just wasn't expecting. So she really wanted to talk with me and make sure that I was looking to convert for the right reasons. We had a several-hour-long phone call. I brought her through a few of the websites, and that she, at the end, she really supported what I was doing and agreed to sponsor me. That and then on March 25th of 2012, the Feast of the Annunciation, I was chrismated. Now, this is more or less my story. In 4 years, I've gone from being a rather confused, uninformed individual with waning ties to my spiritual life to an active leader in my OCF chapter. Now, Andrew Boyd will talk more about how to effectively run and organize an OCF chapter, but I would just like to touch upon a few things that I really felt had a positive impact on me in OCF. Our chapter was very big on never forcing anyone to go to church or other events. People wanted to go, accommodations were made so that they would have a ride. This is a huge factor for retention of membership. One of the worst things a chapter can do, in my opinion, is to try and force or harass people so that they go to church or other events. By doing this, it really drives that person away from both OCF and, in some cases, Christ himself. When a person is welcomed for whatever they feel they can do, then it really helps keep a positive atmosphere and helps to keep that person as active as they want to be. OCF's experience is what each person makes it. Especially as someone who knew very little about Orthodoxy, I was, and still am, asking a lot of questions, some of which may have seemed silly or extremely basic to others. However, people never laughed, they never mocked me, rather, I was given the best answer they could give. This level of understanding and care not only made me feel a lot more comfortable, but encouraged me to learn as much as I could about the faith. As I said before, OCF is really what you make it. People can be as active or as inactive as they choose, and as a chapter, people can explore parts of the faith that they are interested in or have questions or concerns about. For me, OCF was and still is a fundamental part of my college career. It revived me spiritually, it basically saved my life, and I can never repay everyone who played a part in this life-changing experience for me. Thank you for listening, and I hope that some part of my story can help provide guidance as you go about starting and fostering other OCF chapters. After the presentation, the floor was open to questions. I've done my best to include as many questions as I could remember. I apologize if anything was omitted. As a priest, what can I do to make newcomers feel more welcome during Divine Liturgy and other services? Now, most churches have the idea of offering a warm welcome to visitors, and this is definitely a good idea. However, I feel that it is also important to be upfront with people. Letting them know ahead of time about things like closed communion will prevent awkward situations from arising during the service itself. A good example of this being problematic was when at our church we had a Roman Catholic monk visiting. He went up to receive communion, and he was informed that he wasn't allowed to do so by his superiors, but the priest had to stop him when he actually got to the chalice. This was very, very awkward. We have a very pious man who had been denied communion at the last moment, and it really made a bit of an awkward tone for the rest of the service. Simple instructions can help avert problems like this and can be given with straightforward explanations so that it does not come across as offensive. Another suggestion is to have an experienced or friendly person stand near the visitor and help them through the service, potentially adding small explanations or giving directions when needed. In terms of retention, it is often nice to try and find a way to include the individual in some way, provided the individual wants to. For me, I have always been very musically oriented. I did a lot of stuff with music all throughout my stuff in elementary school, middle school, high school, things like that. And so the priest allowed me to sing in the choir to help me learn the service and keep me engaged. It was nice to feel that I could do something rather than have to simply stand there and feel out of place. Describe how a typical meeting works for your OCF chapter. Our chapter sets aside 2 hours a week for our meeting. We start off with a prayer, most often O Heavenly King, though occasionally other prayers were used appropriate to the day or season. We then dealt with chapter business, arranging rides to church that Sunday, planning for events, and so on. When the business was over, we spent the rest of the meeting on a discussion topic prepared by one of the officers. These discussions could be about anything, really, an article someone found, a passage from a book or letter, a piece of scripture, anything. There are some topics we do try and coordinate with different parts of the liturgical year, like discussing fasting around the beginning of Great Lent, or talking about trying to balance our spiritual responsibilities with those of our college lives at the start of the academic year. Usually for these discussions, we try and have something to guide the discussion, discussion questions, an article, something like that. But we generally find that it's best to let the discussion drive itself. If people are really interested in a certain part of the topic, take the time to focus on it, and people will be able to feel more engaged. If people don't want to go over certain things, you can gloss over them quickly and then keep moving. We do have one hard and fast rule about discussion. It will never include talking about politics. People get a little too passionate about it, and it can get very polarizing. People get offended, and that's not an environment we want to have at our OCF meetings. We want to keep things to more spiritual discussion. What is the role of clergy at your meetings? We are very fortunate to have several clergy who have attended our meetings. We have numerous priests, and even on occasion, Archbishop Nikon. In all cases, unless they were specifically asked to lead a discussion, which occurred very rarely, I can actually think of one instance when this happened in my 4 years, the priests mainly listened. OCF is, and in my opinion, should be about putting the college students first. By allowing them to lead the discussions and interact with it, even if that means making mistakes, they are able to learn. Clergy are very helpful for providing insight when it is appropriate and keeping the discussions on track, as tangents often happen and can get out of hand. Clergy often can provide useful information as to what church doctrine may say on a particular subject or share experiences pertinent to that subject. How big is your OCF chapter? How many people do you usually have at meetings? Our OCF chapter recently had a big bubble in terms of membership. The graduating class before mine had about 10 people in our OCF chapter, most of whom were very active. I remember meetings my freshman and sophomore year where we actually had 15, 20 people in attendance. However, this past year we were much smaller, with only 4 or 5 people in most meetings. Like most organizations, OCF chapters fluctuate in size depending on the year. However, people should not view this really as a problem, but rather just try to have their chapter be involved as best they can with the number of people they have available. In what way is your OCF chapter associated with your university? Our chapter is a formally recognized student organization at UConn that we are in the university database. We are eligible to participate in official events like the involvement fair and have permission to use things for logos, etc. This is really helpful because it lets us have a spot in the involvement fair each semester and to help with recruiting, and it lets us use also a lot of campus resources. We can rent out rooms to use for events we're hosting, that we have access to their new site they have up. It's called UConTact, where we're able to post information, show our calendar, all stuff like that. In addition, we also do actually have our own outside bank account that we have a tax number. We are able to manage our own budget, and this generally is really helpful for when we're trying to get places. We can reimburse people for gas, so it's not quite so expensive, especially since generally there's only a few people who happen to have a car. Thank you everyone for listening, and again, I hope you found the information here valuable.